This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Congestion capacity, distribution zone, those yawn-inducing terms, which could apply to traffic infrastructure, also belong in the energy industry lexicon. Here's another one you may have heard, net metering. Net metering is associated with solar power and is the subject of big policy battles happening all over the country. Though it might sound a bit boring to non-energy types, Sam Evans-Brown is an energy type, and he's here to tell us why net metering is important and interesting. He's host of NHPR's podcast Outside In, which is about the natural world and how we use it. The latest episode is all about the accidental origins of net metering. And Sam, so great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me in.
So Sam, my job as a host is to be interested in these kind of conversations. So you've convinced me. Now you have to convince our listeners. Why is net metering fascinating?
Well, so net metering is the bedrock, the sort of wonky bedrock of the American rooftop solar power industry. Every state where you see solar panels on people's roofs has net metering, and without it, they wouldn't exist. And it may sound like it's an indecipherable term, but the words are there, net metering, right? So the meter is the thing that's on the side of your house that counts how much electricity you've used, and net as in net versus gross. So if you have solar panels on your roof, they can feed backwards into the grid, your meter runs backwards, and then if you're buying electricity, then the meter runs the other way. And then at the end of the month, you just get billed for wherever the needle ends up.
And when the needle goes backwards, it goes back to the power company.
Yeah, in a way. It sort of goes to your friends and neighbors, basically, and then you get paid for it.
That's a very charitable way to look at it. Not everybody has that view. But you actually tracked down the first example of net metering. So what was the story?
So I had this kind of intuition that net metering didn't have a particularly, let's say, academic beginning, because it just seemed like such a strange way to pay for something that, oh, we're just going to take your meter and we're going to run it backwards. I mean, nothing else in the utility industry works that way. And so when I started to dig around, I found that indeed that is the case. It began with a guy named Stephen Strong, who was an architect back in the 60s. He was an engineer for an oil pipeline company and decided he was going to strike out and start a solar company. The very first instance of net metering was on top of a subsidized housing project in which they had slapped a bunch of solar panels up there, and without asking anybody's permission, they wired them up so that they could run backwards onto the grid. And so here's, we actually have a clip where you can hear him telling that story.
I mean, did you talk to the utility at all? Did you show them your design and say, this is what we're going to do?
No. The developers... they said, don't worry about that. You just get the technical side of this done and get it working, and we'll take care of it. We're going to be interfacing with the utility. It turned out that they didn't say anything about the system to the utility purposefully. So when the system was complete and ready essentially to start up, one of the brothers came up into the mechanical penthouse on the top of the building and said, well, how are we doing with the solar, Stephen? I said, well, it's ready to go. We just need to get permission from the utility to interconnect with the grid. And he threw the switch and he said, that's okay, we'll take care of that. And told me at the time, there's one thing in your career that you should learn early, and that is it's easier to ask forgiveness than it is to ask permission.
Whoa, guerrilla move there.
Well, then the way they wound up asking permission, quote unquote, was to invite all sorts of heavyweights to the ribbon cutting. And so once all these, you know, people from the federal government and congressmen and senators had said their piece about how great and forward thinking this building was, then the utility executives had to stand up and say their piece. And they're not about to say, you know, this is a travesty that could undermine our entire business model. They just said nice things and moved on with their lives.
Well, especially since it's on low-income housing, you know, we think of solar as a real privilege right now.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. It doesn't have to be. You know, you can think of ways that you could structure, agreements where all you'd have to do is sign on to an existing project, and it shouldn't cost you a huge amount of capital. I mean, energy isn't that expensive, and the cost of solar has fallen so much that it is quite competitive. It's just this question of how do we pay for the grid that delivers the solar to you that has turned out to be a sticky one.
Okay, so outline of why it's a sticky issue and why it's such a big debate now. Then this was what, back in the 70s when he did this?
Yeah, and so it's become a debate now because we're getting to the point where enough solar power is being net metered that the utilities are starting to say, wait a second, there are some downsides to this for us. And if you think about it, if you were to carry this to its logical, you know, conclusion, well, sort of theoretical logical conclusion, where if everyone had solar panels on their roof and everyone wasn't paying an electric bill, there would be no money to pay for the grid that would deliver those electrons to your friends and neighbors.
Can you break that down for me a little bit more, the pros and cons of how this works?
So the solar industry says that it's beneficial because it's, you know, at this early stage, it's all this generation is happening at a time that's really problematic for the grid. It's sort of shaving off peak hours. But what the utilities have been saying is that, you know, if you do this too much, you're going to be shifting the cost of maintaining the grid. So I spoke with Michael Harrington, who, you know, he's a legislator in New Hampshire, a former electric utility regulator, and he made this point really eloquently.
It's a taking from the not so people that have not so much and giving it to people have more. Say I was a retired school teacher in Manchester living in an apartment. There's no way I'm going to put solar panels on that apartment roof and get any benefit from net metering, but I'm going to have to pay for it because some guy in Bedford, I just use Bedford as an example, got nothing to do with a problem with Bedford, but he might have a 4,000 square foot house. And he says, boy, if I do this net metering thing in 5 or 6 years, I'll be getting basically free electricity. But if I'm living in a mobile home or an apartment building or a small house, or even if I'm just someone who says, I'm worried about paying my mortgage for the next 5 or 6 months, not that I'm going to be able to make money 6 or 7 or 8 years from now after I break even. So it's a reverse distribution of wealth from the way we normally do things in the United States. And I don't think that's right.
That's Michael Harrington speaking there with Sam Evans-Brown for the Outside In podcast. Sam is with me, and he's discussing the scintillating topic of net metering. And it actually is getting more exciting as the moments go on.
Oh, I'm glad you think so. I like
it's
how
kind of in the net metering way. It's getting bigger and bigger, almost going backwards.
Yeah. I like how he got the term congestion into the upfront. That's one of my favorite energy terms.
So his point is this benefits people who can afford it, less the school teacher on a pension or someone living in a mobile home.
Yeah, and this is the argument that the utilities have made, is that most solar owners are in fact people of above average income, and there are many studies that can show that to be the case. Again, it doesn't necessarily have to be that way, but certainly that is the way things are now. So then, if that is the case, if people who can least afford it are going to wind up shouldering the costs of paying for the grid, that is eventually going to be a problem and something that a lot of regulatory reformers are looking to head off at the pass.
So the policies on this, I guess, vary from state to state. How about here in New Hampshire? What's the conversation? Why are we in this discussion?
So right now we're in the midst of a proceeding in the New Hampshire Public Utilities Commission, the hallowed halls of the PUC, one of my favorite places to hang out if you need a nap at any point in the day. But the outlines of the battle here in New Hampshire look a lot like the outlines in every other state, where you have the utility saying that solar should get paid the exact same way that every other power plant gets paid, which is to say they sell into the wholesale markets. You know, those costs are then absorbed and turned into retail rates, as opposed to this weird let's run your meter backwards business. And then you have the solar providers on the other end of the debate saying, don't touch it, just leave net metering alone. Without it, you're going to kill all the jobs in our industry. And then you've got a bunch of stuff in the middle, which is basically just sort of tweaking the number. You know, if the solar people are saying we should get paid 17 cents and the utilities are saying you should get paid 6 cents, they're sort of middle of the ground proposals that say, OK, let's go with 12. But then, you know, I got really excited about some of these more radical ideas that maybe the whole way that you should pay for electricity should change, where instead of just taking all of the costs of the grid and all of the costs for the energy generated that goes across it, you know, adding them up, dividing them by everybody and averaging it all out into one sort of, you know, not particularly reflective number, what if you were to encourage people to pay the cost of energy as it is? Because once you learn anything about the grid, what you know is that the price of electricity from moment to moment varies wildly.
Based
on demand, yeah. And there are times even where the price is negative, where power plants will pay you so that they don't have to shut down. And then it goes all the way from those negative prices up to, you know, thousands of dollars per megawatt hour, which is, you know, hundreds of times what it normally costs in times of really high demand when you've got everything on the grid cranking at full power and you've got to turn on the jet fuel combustion turbines just to keep the lights on.
So what are these radical proposals that you mentioned?
So the one that I like the most, and, you know, I'll say with some caveats here that there are reasons to be skeptical about this idea. It is so different that we don't know what, you know, what technology problems we might encounter on the way to it or you know, how much it would cost just to roll out the infrastructure to make this possible. But those caveats aside, I like the idea of every hour you would have a new price for electricity, and every home would have a little display on the wall that would tell you what is the price this hour. That price could have a cap so that you weren't exposed to the real, you know, the real brutality of the wholesale market, but that would mean that you would, you know, you just think about it.
You'd be a lot more conscious of what was going on in those peak hours, what, 2 to 8 or something in the afternoon?
Yeah.
When people are going home, cooking dinner, putting on the television.
Exactly.
That is when you most want to use power, but it should cost the most.
Right. And think about the things that you'd be willing to do at a different time if you had a signal that it would save you money to do it. You know, think about running your dryer. Doesn't matter when you run your dryer. You could just set it to go in the middle of the night, for instance, and you can take the clothes out in the morning. You know, running your dishwasher the same way. There are businesses that could make money off of this. So you could have people selling you, you know, a little widget that you'd stick on your hot water heater and it would tell your hot water heater to only turn on when prices are really low.
Is anybody working on this? I mean, is this the future of net metering?
Well, actually, it's funny. There was a pilot that was rolled out in the New Hampshire Electric Cooperative, so mostly northern New Hampshire, and they ran into lots of problems with the smart meters that they installed on people's homes that would enable this kind of price signal, and they had to put the brakes on their pilot and say, you know, they're actually suing the manufacturer of the smart meter until they get it all worked out. So people are trying it. It's very new. There are lots of kinks to be worked out before these things can happen.
Sam Evans-Brown, he's host of NHPR's podcast Outside In, which, by the way, Outside Magazine named Best Podcast of 2016. Thank you so much for schooling us in net metering.
Thanks for soldiering through.
You can listen to the full episode about this subject at outsideinradio.org, or you can find a link at wordofmouthradio.org.